They become the three original imagist poets, and that was coined by Ezra. They set out the principles of imagist, because they're all writing poetry. They set out the principles together. They're always going to cafes and coffee shops and the British Museum and the British Library, and they hang out together all the time. And one of the components of imagist poetry is going to be direct treatment of the thing, whether subjective or objective. And there's three components. The other is to use absolutely no word that doesn't contribute to the presentation. Not a long, flowery poetry stuff, but this is just direct stuff. And then as regarding to rhythm, to compose in a sequence of musical phrase, not in a sequence of a metronome, not da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but something much more flowing and voice-like. And also, imagist poetry should be bright and fresh and active, the active moment of time, and not just be about the realization of, not just about nature, but about the realization of a phenomenological instance of nature that happens in an actual action. So imagists are also, as you imagine how I'm describing that, they're influenced by haiku, so they're influenced by Asian stuff. And in fact, this Iokio print, apparently Adlington wrote that Ezra Pound was actually really influenced by that, because he saw this print, he saw it in the British Museum, was about a moment in time. It just speaks to a moment in time. This was done in the 1700s. And data shows that he actually went and looked at this print over and over again, Ezra Pound did. So in 1912, in a little tea shop, Hilda is there, and Ezra is there, because they're still friends. And Hilda says she's got these poems, and she's shown some of them to Ezra. And then she says, "Ezra, do you think I should send these two poems to a publisher?" And Ezra says, "Yeah, I already sent them for you. And I signed your name HD, Imagist, and that's your name now." But he just said that, and she says, "Wait, what? You said what? What do you mean?" And in fact, he decided that she should be called HD. He came up with this, coined this word, Imagist. He coins this term, and he decides that she's going to be called HD. And at the beginning, she was kind of like, "Yeah, I don't know about that." She had used a lot of other pseudonyms. But then ultimately she falls for that, and she goes along with this HD thing that follows her for the rest of her life, and we still call her HD today. So there are a group of other poets who became part of this imagist group, and here's some of them. So not only do we have Adlington and HD and Ezra Pound, but we also have T.S. Eliot and William Faulkner and William Carlos Williams and Amy Lowell, who was a lesbian. And she was already a pretty well-known poet by that time. And she financed a little volume of imagist poetry because she was relatively well-to-do. And so these people are all doing and following those tenets of imagist requirements to create that kind of poetry. Who is this person? Does anybody know who this is? This is prize-worthy. I'm going to see who's there. Aaron, see who gets this first, because they're going to win a prize. Okay, I'm going to give you hints. Here's the first hint. This person, this woman, wrote books that have sold 2 billion copies.
Agatha Christie.
Yes! It is Agatha Christie.
Holy shit.
Good job, Melinda. It's Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie was around then. She was in London. She was young. She was working with these people. And she was writing poetry as well. And Agatha Christie, as you know, if you're not familiar with that, she wrote all those mystery stories, and she's actually been the most successful novelist of all time. Amazing. 2 billion books. So back to why we care about Hilda Doolittle. So first of all, consider what's really, this is the, really the beginning, or the beginning of the time, at this time, of blank verse poetry. Before that, everybody was always rhyming. They always had a certain rhyme scheme. And now they're talking about blank verse poetry. And so that's something that she's really breaking ground on. And also think about what imagist poetry was supposed to be. And let's look now at one of Agatha Christie's poems. And here it is. She actually typed this herself. And this is her poem, and it goes like this. I'll do it in Agatha's voice. I like living I have sometimes been wildly, despairingly, and acutely miserable, racked with sorrow, but through it all, I still know quite certainly that just to be alive is a grand thing. Okay, so that's an okay poem. It doesn't rhyme, so it's got that mind first thing, but here's the big question. Is this a fresh, active moment in time? Nah, it really isn't. She's not doing it there. She's not doing what the imagists were supposed to do. There she is. So here's Hilda, and here is one of her poems. This is Oread, and she wrote this in 1914. Whirl up sea, whirl your pointed pines, splash your great pines on our rocks, hurl your green over us, cover us with your pools of fur. Yeah. That was published in The Blast, which was a magazine, in 1914. And let's ask this. Is that a fresh, active moment in time?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. It totally is. In fact, what else makes you feel like you're covered in a pool with tiny pine needles? Huh? Kind of an orgasmic moment, huh? And so, and I'm not kidding about this. I mean, she was aware of that, and she's aware of how she's writing, but she just hits this with this incredible moment of time. And now people hadn't been writing this way before, so she's really doing it. Here's another one of her poems. Storm, crash over the trees. You crack the live branch. The branch is white, the green crushed. Each leaf is rent like split wood. You burden the trees with black drops. You swirl and crash. You have the broken off, a weighted leaf. In the wind, it is hurled out, whirls up, and sinks a green stone. Yeah. Okay, that's really a fresh, active moment in time. Here's one of hers called Heat. Oh, wind, rend open the heat. Cut apart the heat. Rend it to tatters. Fruit cannot drop through this thick air. Fruit cannot fall into heat. That presses up and blunts the pointed pears and rounds the grapes. Cut the heat, plow through it, turning it on either side of your path. Yeah, baby. I mean, way yes. And densely visual. And you know, she read Sappho. Who was Sappho? Where did Sappho live?
Lesbos.
Yeah, well, okay, give them shells. Right, that lesbian poet. Yes, yeah, Sappho lived in 600 BC on the Isle of Lesbos, and she wrote this beautiful verse about loving women. And Hilda could read Greek. She could read those ancient Greek things, and she was totally into it. She read in Greek, and she was influenced by these things. So here's Richard Adlington. And here's one of his poems. New love, she has new leaves. After her dead flowers, like the little almond tree, which the frost hurt. Is this an active moment of time? No. How about this one? We'll give him another chance. The beech leaves are silver, for lack of the tree's blood. At your kiss, my lips become like the autumn beech leaves. He's not doing it. He's just not doing it. And the truth is that Ezra recognizes that Hilda is doing it. Now, here's one of his poems. This is called In a Station of the Metro, a 17-word poem. The apparition, or 14-word, the apparition of these faces in the crowd petals on a wet black bough. Well, truthfully, he's doing it. He's pulling this off. But here's the deal. This was printed in Poetry Magazine in 1913. Here, the thing about this is, it took him a year to write this poem. He had to...
I'm sorry.
You're so easy, Tina. he cut this down from 30 lines, and he worked on it. It has that sense of haiku to it. But the reality is that that Adlington's poems, which were... which were in the issue of Poetry Magazine. His poems were in the November issue, and Hilda's poems, when they sent those poems in, These three poems were in the January issue of Poetry Magazine. And there it is. That's the cover of Poetry Magazine. Here's her name, H.D. Imagist, right there. And that's the front cover of that magazine. Imagism was a move, as a movement, was launched with H.D. as its prime exponent because these other guys sucked at it. They couldn't do it. They couldn't pump out these moment of time poems that were vitally interesting. She could do this and it didn't take her a year. She was coming right up with this stuff. And so these other guys acted, and in fact, Adlington helped to publish this. And these other guys were acting more as agents and publishers than poets, truthfully. I mean, certainly, and we'll see, you know, certainly Ezra Pound wrote a lot of poetry. But it's not the same kind of thing. It wasn't the Imagist stuff that he wanted to do, but he didn't seem to be able to pull it off.